listening to One to One with Paul Costello, a podcast from the Stanford School of Medicine.
The Zika virus has now been reported in 23 countries and territories in the Americas. Here in the United States, there have been about 50 cases of the virus in people who travel to infected areas and return to the U.S. So far, there are no indications that Zika has been transmitted by mosquitoes within the continental U.S. The virus is not deadly, but it is known to cause birth defects, and in Brazil, it has been somewhat connected to an increase in neurological disorders and microcephaly, in which infants are born with unusually small heads and incomplete brain development. Yet there is no causal effect known at this point. The World Health Organization declared Zika an international health crisis. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention declared a Level 1 alert, the highest activation, to increase support to combat the outbreak. And President Obama has asked the Congress to allocate $1.8 billion in emergency funding to vaccine research, surveillance, and rapid response programs. Today, we'll talk with Stanford infectious disease expert Yvonne Maldonado about the Zika outbreak. Dr. Maldonado is a professor of pediatrics and of health research and policy at the Stanford School of Medicine. She is also chief of pediatric infectious disease at Stanford Children's Health and medical director of infection prevention and control. Bonnie Maldonado, thank you for joining me at One to One. I guess I want to start with, what is the current threat of the Zika virus in the United States?
Well, as far as we know, the current threat is probably very low. We're still trying to understand exactly what the Zika virus potential is, for example, for congenital defects in babies. We don't really understand that, but as far as we understand, we know that the virus is present in South America, in Mexico, in the Caribbean. And the potential for the virus to arrive in the United States is definitely possible. But we have very good vector control, that is mosquito control, and the majority of the data suggests that the virus is transmitted by mosquito bites.
And microcephaly is the birth defect that there seems to be not a definitive connection, but what would you describe? There are increased cases in Brazil of microcephaly among infants, and there is a connection, seemingly a connection, between Zika and microcephaly.
Yes. So what I would say is there's an association. At this point, it's a very strong association, but we haven't really seen causality. Part of the reason is that the virus has been known for many decades, and yet microcephaly has not been noted as an association with infection. And the issue there may be that microcephaly is not very common. Even it may not be a very common outcome of Zika infection of pregnant women. And in smaller populations or in rural populations where these events aren't really counted or tracked very well, we may have missed these, for example, in rural Africa, in rural Asia, and more recently in 2007 in French Polynesia, where there was an outbreak of Zika virus. There was not a microcephaly signal identified, but it's a relatively small population. By contrast, in Brazil, where you have a very large population and tens to hundreds of thousands of children being born, you may see, with a brand new virus coming into the population, who is completely susceptible, as far as we know, there may have just been initial large numbers of infections with enough of a population to detect the microcephaly. So it may just be that we didn't recognize it before, because you need a large and newly infected population to see it.
Now, you mentioned that the virus has been around for a long time. It was actually discovered in 1947 in the Zika forest in Africa. What's been the mutation of the virus since that time?
So we haven't seen a lot of information about that. It's very, very little is published about the virus. But it is clear that the viruses seem to be similar across the world as it is tracked. But I haven't seen personally any genetic information about sequence variation. What we do know is that the virus in Brazil, at least the ones that have been identified and sequenced, appear to be genotypically similar to the French Polynesian virus that started an outbreak in 2007.
And you can carry the virus and not have any symptoms.
So the virus can infect individuals, again, as I mentioned, by the bite of a mosquito, but only, it appears that only about 1 in 5 people will actually have symptoms. But it doesn't appear, what we don't really understand, is it doesn't appear that the virus lasts or is latent. It doesn't stay in the body for long periods of time. But now there appears to be evidence that, in fact, it may stay in some secretions, for example, saliva and semen, for some period of time. We don't really know how long.
And of the cases in the U.S., there have been apparently 23 cases so far. One of those has been transmitted through sexual intercourse.
Yes, we assume that that's the case because the person who was originally infected was out of the country in an area where Zika was known to be circulating, and then the sexual partner was then infected after the index case arrived back in the U.S. There was actually another report a few years ago of a similar incident. There were two scientists who had gone to Uganda to study Zika. I don't know what they were studying, but they were in Uganda working. And when they came back to the U.S., around the time of traveling return, they developed symptoms compatible with Zika. And so they were tested. And the spouse of one of those investigators actually developed Zika infection after his arrival. And they actually published this paper a few years ago. But again, when this virus is circulating with high prevalence, you can't really tell whether in a population with an ongoing outbreak, how much is sexually transmitted and how much is not.
What are the implications or ramifications of the declaration by the World Health Organization that this is an international crisis, health crisis? What does that mean, and what takes place when are they trying to get out ahead of it? Is that essentially it, after sort of being beaten up for the way in which they responded to Ebola?
Yes, I think that after the experience with H1N1 in 2009 and more recently with Ebola in 2014, the World Health Organization is realizing that they really need to try to get in front of some of these emerging diseases. The rapidity and the dramatic consequences of this association, if it's really a true link to Zika, are just incredible. When you see the pictures of these babies and you see how commonly it appears to happen, that is the microcephaly, I think there's a lot of concern. In addition, there are political and economic ramifications because this is a widespread disease. We know if it spreads like some of its cousins, that is dengue, West Nile, or others, that it can rapidly infect hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. And if there is a severe effect, I think the WHO realized that they need to at least start getting the word out and getting countries to respond.
And here in the United States, just this week, the president is seeking from Congress $1.8 billion authorized funds to fight Zika, to do vaccine research, to do abatement of mosquitoes. You've been in Washington, and you're going back to Washington. What's the current overall plan that you see that's becoming to take formation?
So the first thing, I think the basics are really important. We need to understand exactly what the virus is or is not doing. Is this really related to the virus? The cases in Brazil are a little confusing for a number of reasons. First of all, why haven't we ever seen this before?
Microcephaly, you mean?
The microcephaly cases, yes. Why haven't we seen these before? Could it be possible that they're related to something else that is co-transmitted with Zika, or is there some environmental factor that seems to be exacerbated by Zika? Some of the initial questions, for example, is this really Zika? Still need to be confirmed. It's not clear, of course, because this was a prospect. It happened so quickly that every child who had microcephaly in Brazil so far, which I think the cases are over 4,000 now, were they really microcephaly cases by a very strict definition of head size? And also, did all of these have evidence of Zika infection or not? So all of those things take time. So we need to understand really what the association might be. And secondly, how does this virus, if it is a cause of neurologic and brain defects, how does that happen? As you mentioned, a vaccine would be important, even if we didn't find that major association, because certainly we need to do proof of principle around some of these emerging strains to see how quickly we can ramp up. And that will be another topic that will come up soon around how quickly can we get a safe vaccine trial out. And then finally, as you mentioned, the ever-present problem of mosquitoes, which has been an issue forever with other diseases, most notably malaria, different species, but still the idea that you have to use abatement, which is very hard to do outside of developed settings.
So the advice, really, the current thinking is that the most vulnerable individuals to Zika are women who are of childbearing age and may be pregnant or may be thinking of being pregnant or may be considering pregnancy in the future. That's really the warning today. Is that correct? I mean,
well, so the answer to that is they're maybe not more susceptible, but that's the population at risk of most serious potential outcomes. And that's because, as far as we understand from the history of Zika infection and the natural history, is that the virus doesn't seem to be very severe in healthy individuals. And if you look at the reports, of which there are not very many, it causes a mild febrile illness, which seems to wane, and people recover with almost no complications. Now, there is an association with Guillain-Barré syndrome in healthy people as well, non-pregnant and pregnant. That is a temporary, mostly temporary paralysis that can occur. It's thought to be autoimmune in nature and can occur with many different infections. So this is not specific to Zika, but there has been that identification made. But the real risk population for bad outcomes is the potential for a pregnant woman to get infected and then have the virus transmitted to her fetus.
And the current advice to women who are of childbearing age or pregnant is not to travel to the Americas.
Yes, it's a pretty broad recommendation. It's don't go there. Some countries, as you probably know, have actually implemented recommendations saying if you live in these countries, don't get pregnant for the next 2 years. And I don't know why they think 2 years is a magic number. They assume that maybe they'll spray the mosquitoes out of existence. But those are very sweeping and difficult recommendations to make in light of oncoming events in Brazil, in particular the Olympics coming up.
I know. I was just going to ask you about the Olympics. It seems to me that when, you know, you see the announcement that maybe perhaps advising women not to go, or maybe teams in general, not to go to Brazil for the Olympics, the Summer Olympics, that's a huge caution. That's a huge statement.
Yeah, it's a pretty broad and actually surprising statement, given that this is the economic viability of this whole country, that of Brazil, could be at risk because they've probably invested quite a bit. But it just shows you the severity of the cases. So, for example, in 2014, there were probably 150 cases of microcephaly reported in Brazil. Now, remember, it's not generally a reportable problem or illness or disease. So it may be vastly underreported. But nonetheless, in May of 2015, it was recognized that an outbreak of Zika began in Brazil. And within a few months, that is by October, the Brazilian Public Health Ministry had identified several hundred cases of microcephaly among women that it suspected had had Zika virus at some point during their pregnancy. So it is a very rapid rise. At this point, as I mentioned, they've identified over 4,000 cases, and it appears that there may be cases in other countries around Latin America. Now, the problem, of course, is if you do get infected as a pregnant woman, you still have to wait for that gestational period to go by. So we don't know when this is going to peak out. If you just think back to the May outbreak, perhaps pregnant women were infected early or midway through their pregnancy, so the cases just started popping up, you know, weeks to months later. So that's why it may have only come to attention by October.
Where is the majority of research taking place today? Is it in the U.S.? It is in about the reality of Zika, the connection between Zika and microcephaly. Where is that research taking place, and how mature is that research?
So it's not really clear. I don't think there's a Zika center. There's a few papers that have been published over the years. Many of them have not been in the developed world. They've been in pockets where these cases have occurred, the cases of Zika, not microcephaly. So, for example, in the Yap, island of Yap in the French Polynesian area, there was an outbreak, as I mentioned, a few years back. And CDC and World Health Organization and other investigators kind of went out and investigated that, and then that kind of just... it resolved, and no major work was done since then. So that's really why we think that we have an opportunity here to use existing tools that we have for other related viruses. So the useful news is that it is in the family of flaviviruses. These are RNA viruses like West Nile, dengue, and chikungunya. And we do have, in fact, Stanford has a very notable arbovirologist, who Dr. Desiree Labode, who does work with dengue and chikungunya in Africa right now, and is and starting studies in the Caribbean and maybe Brazil as well. So we hope to leverage that expertise in existing viruses that are related to try to develop an understanding of Zika. And fortunately, there are a number of people who work with those other viruses. In fact, a dengue virus vaccine just recently became available primarily in Latin America and outside the U.S. because there have been massive outbreaks of that disease as well.
As we move into the summer months and the proliferation of mosquitoes throughout the U.S., what do you think we'll be seeing the ramping up of health advisories?
Well, we know that the there's two strains of mosquito that seem to transmit Zika. That's Aedes aegypti is the most common, and the other is Aedes albopictus, both of which exist primarily in the southern and low northeastern part of the United States. So I imagine that those will be the areas where most surveillance and abatement measures will be taken. Personally, many decades ago, investigated malaria transmission in California. We generally don't think of malaria in the U.S. We have a competent mosquito vector, but what needs to happen is the local mosquitoes have to become infected. And the way that would happen is somebody who has the virus in their blood who comes to the U.S. needs to infect a mosquito when the mosquito has a blood meal from that person. So the likelihood of that happening in the United States is very low. Having said that, it's not zero. So we would need to prevent that from happening if, in fact, local mosquitoes became infected and began transmitting disease. Again, intensive efforts would be made to try to prevent that. So I think over the summer, if you don't live in the southern parts of the United States or the northeastern areas, you're probably at lower risk of local transmission, given the already low risk even in those areas. But I think precautions around being around mosquitoes, traveling again, the travel warnings are going to probably become more informed as we learn more about the actual natural history of Zika infection.
So there's really no prophylactic. There's really nothing that someone can take to protect themselves against these mosquitoes.
Well, you can use DEET. A DEET-containing compound, all of these insecticides, the ones that work best contain DEET. And those are the usual travel warnings that anybody will get when they go for example, to areas where there's malaria, which is much more common around the world. And we know that if you wear protective clothing and you wear DEET insecticide and you're careful about when you go outdoors, you can avoid becoming infected with these with some of these mosquito-borne diseases. But certainly nothing is 100% foolproof. And we also have to worry a little bit about using a lot of insecticide in pregnant women in particular. It's thought to be safe, but at this point, the risks of contracting Zika in an area that's endemic right now may be, or epidemic that is, may be higher. We don't know. So people are recommending DEET or other insecticides, even for pregnant women, if they have to travel to these areas.
So what is the alarm level? What should, you know, as we move into the summer, you know, everyone's trying to advance great caution. There's certainly the significance of the WHO declaring a international health crisis, the CDC doing essentially the same, ramping it up significantly to a health crisis. What should people? It's the CDC declared a level one alert, which is the highest activation. What is this too much? Is this appropriate?
I think this is appropriate until we know better. We have become a global community. We know now how quickly diseases can spread from places that we never heard of, viruses that we've never heard of, and they can spread very quickly for a lot of reasons that we don't have time to discuss, but are obvious: international travel, immigration, the vectors, the mosquitoes can travel as easily as they can get on planes too, and ships, etc. So I think because of an abundance of caution, most public health agencies don't want to be fighting a battle that's already begun. One of the things that we learned from Ebola and other epidemics is that the faster you get a response time, the much more significantly you can impact on the overall epidemic. And so there have been some models that have been created with other diseases showing the time to intervention. And the time to intervention has to be very quick. Otherwise, you still keep seeing ongoing transmission and perhaps bad outcomes. Especially with a disease like this, if, again, it's associated, if you're waiting for more babies to be born, then you really are you're tracking a very long-term gestation of the infection as well as the baby. So starting early, it's the idea is that it's better to be safe than sorry. Trying to understand this virus, trying to understand transmission, what happens in a population like the Western Hemisphere, for all intents and purposes, we are all susceptible to this virus, and what would happen if it was introduced. So yes, the level is very high and it's concerning, but as you can see, we haven't really seen a problem in the U.S. And as Anthony Fauci, who's the head of the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases, has said, we would likely not see an outbreak in the U.S. because it's really about, in the end, mosquito transmission. And we do a very good job in the U.S. of controlling mosquitoes.
We might not see it, but we better be prepared.
Exactly. And also, we want to protect our neighbors and the rest of the world, and we have the knowledge and the capacity to be able to try to do that. It's also important, again, and I obviously don't want to undermine the importance of the individual, but the political and economic stability of a lot of these countries could be at risk because many of them depend on travelers and tourism, and to their own population. If you have a whole generation of children who are born with significant developmental issues, you lose, as we saw from the AIDS epidemic, you lose a whole population, a whole generation of economically important individuals who will sustain a country. Also, this reminds me a bit of the rubella epidemic in the 60s, where we saw, we didn't really understand that rubella could cause the severe congenital infections that it did. And it led to a very important and very effective campaign vaccination, we now have declared that the Western Hemisphere is free of congenital rubella, which caused heart defects, eye defects, brain defects. And so it's a very similar possibility that, you know, if this indeed can happen, it can affect a whole generation of children. It already probably has if it's, again, Zika-related in many parts of Latin America.
Do you know anything about the cooperation, any sort of agreements between Brazil and the U.S. on Zika?
Not specifically. I'm going to a meeting next week where we're going to hear more about that from our colleagues at the Pan American Health Organization, as well as from the Brazilian Ministry of Health. So we'll hear a little bit more. I'm sure that there's a lot of crosstalk at this point, but how that's going to be finalized will probably evolve over the next few weeks. We're already discussing that now.
Bonnie Maldonado, thank you for joining me in One to One.
Thank you.
The preceding program is copyrighted by the Board of Trustees of Stanford University. One to One is produced by the School of Medicine's Office of Communication and Public Affairs. For more information, please visit us at mednews.stanford.edu.